brought to you by the National Society of Genetic Counselors. This is Genetic Counselors and You. Answers to your genetic questions by genetic counselors. For more information about genetic counselors, including what they do and why you might see one, visit aboutgeneticcounselors.com.
I'm Deepti Babu, certified genetic counselor and NSGC member. A quick note that I'm very excited to share with you. For 2020, I'll be hosting the Genetic Counselors and You podcast. So every 2 months, we're continuing to bring experts in to help break down complex topics in genetics that are making people curious, with the goal of turning that curiosity into knowledge that you can apply in your own lives. If you have an idea for a topic that you would like us to explore, please email the show at nsgc@nsgc.org.
And that, for me, is what's really so interesting as a researcher and a patient, is that ultimately uncertainty is inherent in genetic testing, but it's inherent in our lives.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to our next episode of the Genetic Counselors and You podcast. When it comes to genetics and health, there are many things we know. And with such a fast-moving science, there are things we don't fully understand yet. Genetic testing can help us understand and improve our health, but it can also bring about uncertainty. Maybe it's uncertainty of whether you'll have a genetic risk factor come back on a test for a health problem, or maybe it's uncertainty about if that health problem will even happen, and if so, when. This can be difficult, but there are steps that we can take to navigate and manage and ultimately live with this uncertainty. And given the current coronavirus pandemic, maybe these are skills that we can apply elsewhere outside of the realm of genetic testing. So today we're talking with Dr. Marlia Dean-Cruzell. She's an associate professor at the University of South Florida. Her research focuses on how communication can help health outcomes, often in the face of uncertainty. Dr. Dean-Cruzell has been through the genetic testing experience herself and is also part of NSGC's Digital Ambassadors Program. Welcome, Marlia, and thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure.
Well, I'm excited to dig into this topic with you because I think the topic of uncertainty as it pertains to genetic testing is one thing, but I feel like in the context of a public health pandemic and other things that are going on in the world right now, uncertainty is something that's becoming more and more in the forefront of our lives. Well, right off the top, I'm wondering maybe if we could define what we mean by uncertainty so that we kind of have a shared understanding of it, you know, as we discuss things. How would you define uncertainty for us?
So there are lots of different ways I think you can think about uncertainty, but for me, a helpful conceptualization or a definition is that uncertainty exists when we believe aspects of our situation are ambiguous, they're complex, and/or they're unpredictable. So that would definitely, you know, all those facets would relate to COVID-19 right now. In the case of genetics specifically, though, uncertainty often arises when obtained information, so like genetic test results, are imperfect or they're unknown. So this can create uncertainty about a clinical diagnosis and risk management.
And I think if I kind of think about my time in the clinic talking to patients and families, you know, because the Human Genome Project completed and we had the genome sequenced, we think that we've got this all figured out. And uncertainty and the element of uncertainty is surprising in the context of genetic testing. Would you say that that's true?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, if you test positive for a pathogenic or likely pathogenic variant, right, you come to learn that you are significantly at an increased risk for developing hereditary cancer, you know, in comparison to the general population. But that doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to be diagnosed with cancer. And then sometimes there's also the possibility that you could test negative. If that happens, but you still have a family history of cancer, there's lack of context. It might be confusing or overwhelming because you expected to test positive. And then, of course, just in the genetic testing technology, you could also receive a variant of uncertain significance, right? Here, you've got, you know, it looks different than what's normally expected, but it's unclear whether the variant is harmless or has a risk factor. So in all these different scenarios, uncertainty exists. It just exists in different ways. And that for me is what's really so interesting as a researcher and a patient is that ultimately uncertainty is inherent in genetic testing, but it's inherent in our lives. We can't get away from it.
Yeah, as much as we try to.
Yes.
Yeah, and I think that sort of leads to what I wanted to talk about next, which is a bit about the, you know, the genetic testing experience that you went through. I think about 7 years ago, correct me if I'm wrong, you went through genetic testing yourself. And just for the listeners, Marlia's experience circles and your expertise circles around cancer genetics, but much of what we're talking about, you know, there are parallels to other genetic diseases and conditions. But anyway, back to you, you went through genetic testing. So you've definitely dealt with uncertainty as it relates to genetics and your personal health. Can you tell us a little bit about your experience?
Yes. Yeah, so my mom was diagnosed with breast cancer when I was 8 years old, and she was the first one in our family. So it was it was shocking. It was devastating, really, to the family. At the time, it was 1997, so she didn't undergo genetic testing until many years later. But in my case, I actually contemplated genetic testing for a long time before I did it. In fact, for about a year, I think it was, after seeing a genetic counselor with both my mom and my husband, the genetic test kit that my genetic counselor gave me sat in my safe in the back of my closet. Mm-hmm. And as I reflect back on that, I think I took such a long time to decide because I knew if I tested positive, like my mom did, it was going to change my life. And so I wanted to be absolutely sure that I was ready to receive those results, whatever they were. But I think, you know, going back to uncertainty, after I tested positive for a pathogenic variant in BRCA2, I quickly realized that my uncertainty did not go away. I think many individuals, including myself, who have a significant family history of cancer, we undergo genetic testing to confirm what we already expect or worry about, right? That we're also at risk for developing hereditary cancer. Mm-hmm. But while knowing one's genetic predisposition can be empowering to make informed health decisions, undergoing genetic testing does not necessarily decrease or alleviate cancer-related uncertainty. In fact, it often produces new forms or types of uncertainty. And then that forces us to acknowledge and therefore manage uncertainty over time.
Yeah, just for clarity. So, you know, you talked about your mother being diagnosed with breast cancer. So she ultimately had genetic testing, which showed that she had a change, a pathogenic mm-hmm. variant in the BRCA2 gene that's associated mm-hmm. with an increased risk for breast cancer, ovarian cancer, and others. So then you were then offered the option for that testing, and you took a while to decide. That test kit sitting in the box represented your uncertainty about whether you wanted
to get in the tube or not.
And you finally felt comfortable enough, I guess, that you had explored all the different ways in which you would receive that information and decided to go for it. And so when you talk about that the uncertainty doesn't go away, the uncertainty then, it transforms into something else then, I guess, when you get the result back saying, okay, in fact, you have this genetic risk factor. Now you're moving into another type of uncertainty.
Yeah, before you undergo genetic testing, you're wondering if you have, you know, this change, which would put you at risk for hereditary cancer. So it's a maybe, right? It, depending on what your family tree looks like, it might influence you more or less. But once you test positive, it brings up new uncertainties. Now you're dealing with, okay, I have this result. I know my genetic test results and I have an increased risk, but it's not for sure that I'm actually going to be diagnosed with cancer. It's just a lifetime risk, right? And so the very nature of testing positive, from my perspective, and a lot of what my research focuses on, is you become certain about the uncertainty. So mm-hmm. before you're uncertain about if you have it, and then you test positive, And now you're certain about the uncertainty that you had originally. And so then you have to start coping with that in different ways.
Wow. That's kind of making my head explode. Thank you. Seriously. But I haven't heard it described that way before. So when you begin to shift from your certain about your uncertainty, and then you have to become comfortable with that, what does that look like? You know, I'm imagining it's an evolution. It's a process. There's twists, turns, pivots. Life happens. You're also like, you know, you're doing things to reduce that risk is hopefully the opportunity that the genetic test results give you, a chance to get in front of things.
Yeah, I think, well, you really have to take it one day at a time, honestly. Right. And it really depends on the person. Some people might try to reduce, to use that term, you know, reduce the uncertainty as much as possible. And then other people react in different ways. And so they're more managing uncertainty in the sense that, well, some days they might just be okay with the uncertainty they're experiencing. And then other days they really need to reduce it. And other days, maybe they'll actually enhance the uncertainty to make them feel better. So I think it does depend on the person. And ultimately, just over time, you have to figure out how you work, how you think, what makes you feel comfortable. Drawing on lots of support from others can be helpful.
Can you tell us a little bit about how you managed during that process and then living with that uncertainty today?
Yeah, that's a good question. I definitely would say from my perspective, it's managing or living with the uncertainty. It's definitely, I'm not able to reduce it completely. In general, though, there's a few things that I do to try and cope with my uncertainty. The first is I really try to tap into this part of my identity, my family history, the connection between my genes and my family, and really try to help others while continuing to challenge myself. So in a different way, my research really helps me cope with my own uncertain future, because ultimately what I'm trying to do is to improve patients' and families' health experiences by developing different types of communication tools to improve health outcomes. So that makes me, you know, helps me cope in one way. Another thing that's helpful, you know, as a professor, I also teach. And so anytime I teach a class, I'm always trying to teach my students uncertainty management skills. So that could look like teaching them how to effectively seek credible, reliable health information, right? When we're turning to Dr. Google, for example, it's helping them learn how to identify the source of uncertainty that they're experiencing and then acknowledging that, not running from it. What does that look like? And then ultimately learning and teaching them how to self-manage their health journey. I think, you know, so much of a patient's experience happens outside the clinical encounter, and we're never taught how to be patients. Healthcare providers, genetic counselors, physicians, they're taught for years how to be experts on this particular subject, but we're patients all our lives. And so I really try to help my students, giving them specific skills. I think probably one of the most important things I try to draw on when I'm trying to manage the uncertainty in my own life is I'm frequently reminding myself that I'm never going to have all the necessary information to make a decision. It's just never going to happen, right? And so somehow acknowledging that makes me feel better. Mm-hmm. And then I can ultimately, I try to embrace the uncertainty, really. And I didn't really realize this. Now looking back, though, when I finally decided to undergo genetic testing and take that genetic test kit out of my safe in the back of my closet, my mom said this phrase, which has stuck with me so much, and I tell my patients and my students a lot, which is, you make the best decision you can with the information you have at that time.
That's pretty powerful. It just sort of gives you permission, right? Forgiving yourself that it's not perfect. And like you said, it's so contextual and it's so dynamic. So, you know, a day later, you might have different information. You might feel differently about it. kind of going back to what that model of the uncertainty that you were talking about, where sometimes you reduce it, I might have said compartmentalize it, but reduce it is a better description because you just kind of want to get it out of your face. Mm-hmm. And then sometimes you want to let that come towards you a bit more and embrace it.
Mm-hmm.
Did you find a particular moment through that experience that led you to your decision to pursue a PhD?
Actually, really, the pursuit of my PhD goes all the way back to my early childhood experiences, you know, living in, or at least what it felt like living in hospitals as an 8-year-old, watching my mother undergo chemotherapy, radiation, reconstruction, breast surgery, and then all the side effects that came with that. Even though I was 8, I knew what was going on. And yeah. I tried to be involved as much as they would let me as an 8-year-old, because that was how I cope with things, is I want to know what's going on. I want to know the information and be a part of it. So, I mean, that's really why I decided to go into the field of health communication. And then the main reason why I decided to become a professor going further was really to give back to the medical community, who I feel like really saved my mom's life in a variety of different ways.
Right. Yeah. And I think that that is certainly one reaction. And then I definitely know there are people who more information is definitely not something they want.
Mm-hmm.
Those might be the individuals who never really want to pursue genetic testing, but maybe that's a reason. They just don't really want the answers. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes it's easier if we just don't ask the questions. I mean, I guess you've talked about this a little bit already. Like, what have you kind of learned through your research about how people cope? And I think what I'm hearing is just there's so many different ways, and there isn't one right way or one wrong way. And your way can change.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe early, I remember even for myself early on, I was, you know, when I was younger and had fewer dependents, so to speak, in my world, I did not really want to ask too many questions. I didn't even know the questions to ask. And now I feel like more information does help me. It helps me make decisions that impact other people. So are there common experiences or moments that you're seeing, though, even in all these different stories or ways that you're researching how people communicate about health?
Yeah, sometimes we avoid, because I think that's often, before I answer your question, I'll just say, avoidance is an effective coping mechanism. It's one that has consequences, right? So if we avoid information such as not wanting to undergo genetic testing because of trauma or, you know, but that is a legitimate, that's an effective way to cope. Now, the impacts of that is what then we as patients and genetic counselors have to deal with and try to figure out how to support the patient, but also be careful with what can happen to their health. So, but, you know, in answer to your question, really the most common experience is to seek information. So though some do avoid information, most seek information. That's an effective communication uncertainty management strategy. So for example, in the case of previvors, so people like me who they've tested positive for a pathogenic variant, but they haven't been diagnosed with cancer, we tend to seek information by turning to different types of sources. So our healthcare providers as being probably the number one source, and then also cancer-related nonprofits, and then lastly, the internet, and in particular, Facebook and Twitter. These are all different sources of information, and we can get information which then enables us to feel better by seeking, by organizing, by then utilizing the health information that we find or that we learn. It helps us make that informed health decision, whatever it is, and ultimately making that decision, I have found, helps previvors feel empowered. They feel in some, I will preface it, in some control of their genetic health risk.
Yeah, I think you're getting into the nice takeaways that we want to leave people with is there's the kind of professional organizations, there's your healthcare provider, mm-hmm. and then there's the internet. And I think kind of coupled with that, and this is what I would tell families, is really placing a very strong filter in your brain there as much as you can, because not everything that you read is accurate and true. But I think using those resources to find trustworthy places, such as, you know, bouncing something off your healthcare provider, your doctor, mm-hmm. your genetic counselor, or other family members who have gotten a great curated list of something already. I find they can be really great resources.
I think you made a really good point, is that ultimately you want to turn to the experts, right? So if we're thinking about genetics, I mean, genetic counselors, they helped me. My genetic counselor helped me, even though it took some time to make a decision. But she really did help me come to terms with the certainties and the uncertainties, really, that arise before, during, and after the genetic testing process. But we also, again, have to keep in mind that patients aren't just going to see healthcare providers as their main source, because our lives exist outside of the clinical encounter. So as much as possible, when you turn to other types of information sources, bouncing that back to your healthcare provider, sharing what you found, can be really helpful to help them interpret the information and tailor it to your specific experience.
Mm-hmm. And this whole concept of becoming comfortable with uncertainty, I mean, that gives me discomfort. I'm just going to be really honest.
Good company.
Having said that, so I'm feeling that a little bit. I think people are feeling that a little bit more right now with the pandemic layered on top of everything else. And I think there are very important skills and tools that you have probably taught your students and you've done your research on that we can use and apply in many different ways. Some a little more often now than at other times. So you've described gathering information. Can you think of some other ways that we can sort of become more comfortable, as you kind of articulated earlier, about living with that uncertainty? You know, I think I just had to come to the terms with the fact that there's never going to be a perfect time for this or enough information for me to finally say, I have hit my threshold, I'm ready.
Yeah, no, it's a great question, and one I'm really not an expert on still, even given my experiences, because it's something I'm continually struggling with, but I kind of push through. I think uncertainty, it changes over time, right? So it kind of ebbs and flows. And so I think first off, we're thinking about trying to manage long-term uncertainty, whether we're talking about someone like me who's, you know, at risk for hereditary cancer, or just thinking about COVID-19 and the effects that that could have on you and your family. So this is a long-term process. So I think acknowledging that, identifying the type of uncertainty. So is it medical uncertainty you're experiencing? Is it familial uncertainty that you're experiencing? Is it personal? Is it financial, right? That there are different types. And without going into all theory on you, there are different types of uncertainty. And so if we can identify what we're experiencing, that is a good way to then figure out, okay, what do I need to address it? Is it talking to my mom about it? Is it talking to my friend about it? Is it finding a social support group? Is it having a conversation on Twitter? So figuring out what it is, acknowledging it. So building on what we've discussed already, I think one thing I would add is that we are often more resilient than we think we are. And so when we're faced with genetic information that, you know, is probabilistic, complex, ambiguous, we can actually focus on our ability to deal with it based on past experiences that we have. So we might not have actually received genetic test results before, but we have dealt with uncertainty in other contexts, right? So what career to pick, who to spend our lives with. We oftentimes don't think of these moments in our lives as times of uncertainty, but they are, and they can be stressful at times. And so engaging in self-reflection to think about what did we learn in those experiences and then apply them to our present uncertain situation. And I think that can be really helpful, and definitely something that I have been applying in other uncertain experiences that I've had since learning about BRCA2 in my family.
Right. Because as you said, the uncertainty doesn't really stop. So it's a matter of responding to it and living with it. Mm-hmm. I like that idea that we have done a lot with uncertainty that we don't even really necessarily recognize as uncertain at the time. So
exactly. I think we're more experts than we think.
Well, that seems like a good place to conclude our conversation, because I think you've left us with some hope and some realization that we probably are managing a lot better than we think. It's just perhaps these new circumstances are making us kind of question that a little bit. So thank you for sharing your time and your expertise with us.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for inviting me here, and I really enjoyed our conversation.
This podcast is produced by the National Society of Genetic Counselors. Subscribe to Genetic Counselors and You on iTunes, Google Play, and Spotify.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Genetic Counselors and You. For more information about genetic counselors and to access tools and resources mentioned in this episode, visit aboutgeneticcounselors.com.